Carla, please read item 577.
Authorize a competitive solicitation and contract for the photographic traffic enforcement system and related services.
Colleagues, before we hear the presentation on item 577, I'd like to make a motion to remove the emergency clause. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you. The motion was moved by myself. I don't know if that's allowed. Okay. Seconded by Commissioner Fish. Carla, can you please call the roll on the motion?
Fish.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye. The motion passes. Item 577 is now the first reading of a non-emergency item. And now to the presentation.
Thank you. I'm Dana Dickman. I'm the safety section manager with PBOT. Thanks for having us here today, and I just want to give a thank you to the Traffic Division for continued collaboration on automated enforcement. We're here today because our current contract terminates in spring of 2020. Our vendor has been in place since 2010, and we need to run a competitive solicitation in order to continue the existing services we have. A competitive solicitation will also allow us to look at updates in technology, will allow us to negotiate pricing and the overall process that we're using. That could be really beneficial to the city's program. It will also allow for expansion of cameras, which is part of two actions in the Vision Zero plan. Said all this, I'll move on. In the action plan, the data set that we looked at identified 91% of our crashes have some sort of behavioral component, meaning there's speed involved or there's dangerous behaviors such as red light running. Within that plan, there were two specific calls for action. One was to pilot our fixed speed camera program, which we have done over the last 2 years. And then the second was to expand the red light running cameras, which we've had in place since 2000. The photographic traffic enforcement system is actually comprised of a number of different types of enforcement. One is the mobile speed van, which goes with a uniformed police officer, and it goes to different locations. It can be moved around. It's not a fixed system. Typically, they're going to school zones, places where we've had a lot of requests for enforcement, work zones, or other places where there's a concern about speed in a specific location. Then we also have the red light running cameras. Those are at intersections. Those have been in place, as I said, since 2000. We have 11 cameras at 10 different approaches around the city. We have the fixed speed camera system that we've had since 2016. Those are placed on high crash corridors in areas where we've seen both a history of crashes and significant issues around speeding. We have 8 cameras or 8 approaches on 4 different corridors. And then a new competitive solicitation or a new contract would allow us to implement dual cameras, which allows for intersection cameras that can sight for red light running and speeding through an intersection. We gained that authority in 2017. With the rest of the state, our current cameras don't have the capability to do that.
Quick question before you move on. Our authority to install these cameras is limited to our properties, or can we put them wherever we want?
For the fixed speed cameras, it's currently limited to high crash corridors.
Okay.
For the red light running cameras, I don't think it's not limited in that way. However, we've used them at places where we have a history of red light running and continue to use them that way.
So we're allowed to put them on ODOT property?
I do not believe that we are.
Okay, that was really my question. Okay, thank you.
This shows the existing camera distribution throughout. These are the fixed cameras throughout the city. The red dots represent the red light running cameras, and the green triangles represent the fixed speed cameras. You can see they're distributed throughout the city. We have different issues on different corridors, so the type of camera is used based on the type of crashes that we're experiencing there. And we've seen these cameras be successful.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Could you go back to the last slide, please? Are the fixed speed safety cameras, do they serve the same function as the red light cameras?
they're citing for completely different behaviors. So the red light running cameras are obviously citing for red lights. They're at intersections. The fixed speed cameras are citing for speed, and they're not at intersections. So they're looking at completely different types of kind of dangerous behavior that's contributing to crashes.
So like trucks parked on the bridge that take pictures of people speeding over the bridge, those kind of things? Unmarked cars, or is these
that
cars?
Would be the mobile van. These cameras, these are fixed. They're in place. The fixed speed cameras in particular have a sign that says that photo enforcement is ahead, also has a speed reader board and a posted speed sign right in advance. So you have actually quite a bit of warning before you actually get to the camera, and they don't move. The mobile van, which we do use throughout the city, that is the only one that actually moves around.
And do you have demographic data on how many red light camera tickets we're getting, and what's been the outcome of those, and what's the demographic breakdown?
We don't have the demographic breakdown because, as Catherine mentioned, race data isn't included in DMV records, and so those are the records that are used to cite folks. We haven't done like a deep analysis on age or anything like that, which we potentially could do, but we don't have kind of demographic data related to it. We do have. What was that?
Do you think we should?
On the age, no. I mean, one of the things we discuss a lot is that we don't know who's being cited or who's in crashes, and particularly related to race data. I'm not sure that knowing who's being cited is as important as knowing what's going on in the neighborhood and who's being impacted, or knowing what the outcomes are for those folks. So I think it would be interesting. I'm not sure that it would change how we're looking at where the cameras should be placed.
I appreciate your answer. I will respectfully disagree, because I think if you're a community that's been over-policed and now you have cameras that are over-policing you as well, I think that it would matter and it would make a difference as to whether or not all communities that are experiencing high crashes are having those same kind of outcomes. Thank you.
The current system performance for red light running is that we've seen a drop in five-year averages from 4.6 injuries at those locations before the red light cameras were in place to 2.8 injuries annually. And with fixed speed cameras, we've seen some significant reductions in speeding on those corridors, a 57% decrease in the number traveling over the posted speed limit, and then an 85% decrease on average in the number traveling 10 over, and that's or greater than 10 over. Again, that's the high-end speeding is where we've seen the most significant drop.
I apologize for asking this again, but did you say that with the fixed speed technology, there's a reader board that tells you what your speed is?
Yeah, in advance of the cameras.
In advance?
Yeah.
I actually find those that information surprisingly, well, first of all, it gets your attention. And second of all, I may or may not be representative of a lot of people, but I generally tailor my behavior to what I learn on the reader board. Let me just put it that way. And sometimes you may be a few miles over, or you just may be, you know, not paying as much attention to the speed. But when it flashes, that gets your attention. So I'm not surprised that there's a significant impact.
We also use reader boards on corridors all over the city without cameras.
Right.
So that sort of speed feedback is something that we try to use all over without citations as well.
One of my favorites is on the west side of Emmanuel Hospital. The Water Bureau has a parking structure there, and there's a little road, and there's a new ER going up, and there's a reader board that tells you your speed there, and it's very large and very conspicuous.
Right in front of the hospital? You'd think that would be enough of a reminder to slow down.
Once the new ER goes in, there'll just be a sign just you know, pointing out where you drop off the victim.
I was actually driving on Marine Drive a couple of weeks ago to go get the free compost from PBOT and came across their reader board. Not only was the reader board, the camera, and the sign, but I was using Google Maps to find the Sunderland Yard, and Google Maps also told me orally that there's a speed camera coming up long before either of your notifications. Mm-hmm. So I thought...
I've heard that from many people, that there's lots of ways people are notified about the existence of the cameras.
Well, let me just say I agree with Commissioner Fish about the reader boards actually changing behavior, because I've noticed that myself. I mean, there are some people who are going to go fast no matter what, but 90% of the people in my neighborhood, when you see the reader board telling you what speed you're going, 90% of people actually look to make sure that they're within the range that they should be. So I have found that very helpful. And so that's why I'm very interested in the data about the punitive impacts and who's being impacted by that. Because all I have is anecdotal data. And
I mean, the flip side to this is, so we've seen a 57% decrease in speeding and 85% in high speeds, I guess. What increase have we seen in citations? Because as someone said before, I'm not as interested in being punitive as I am changing behavior. However, because there's such inadequate enforcement on the street, if we took away a perceived consequence, and the secret is these cameras are not always capturing and issuing citations.
No, they're not.
We call that intermittent consequences.
Carla, would you strike that from the record, please?
Did I say something wrong, Commissioner Fish?
You said something about the little secret.
Oh, okay. You're being funny. All right. Because even though they know, they still don't know when they're on. So it really isn't my goal, or the Bureau's goal, to be punitive. We know that citations are a high citation fee, weirdly, is not a disincentive, according to the studies I've shown. A quick citation, something that comes within days of the event, not weeks or months, is much more of a disincentive. So while I also like those speed reader boards, and I really don't like them to flash at me, it becomes a game. How do I get to the exact number and hopefully stay there? If there's no ultimate consequence, I think we lose that effect over time. Mm-hmm. But I would like to know about the increase in citations, if that's data that's available.
On the corridors where we have cameras, they've all been within 2 years, and so there has been an increase in citations because they didn't exist before. I don't have numbers right in front of me about how the trends on citations have leveled out, but I can get that to you.
Great.
Because we have, you know, a couple of years of data now on some of the cameras.
To all of us.
Sounds good.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And just to get back to you, Commissioner Hardesty, I agree we need more data, and I actually don't think we disagree on whether or not that would be helpful. I'm just not convinced it's data that we can easily get in the near term. And so that doesn't mean we will not continue to work to figure out ways to get it, but we don't have a consistent data source at this time.
You can get these numbers, like the 57% decrease and the 85% decrease. What did that hold?
These are from the citation numbers, but they're not demographic numbers. So these are from the cameras, both collect overall data and the citation data, but that's just speed data. That doesn't tell us anything about the individuals.
So overall data, like every car that comes by, are they collecting data on every...
Not photographic data. The law is very clear around that the photos are not taken unless the law is broken. So they are not collecting photo evidence of every car that comes. It's no different than a tube counter across the street in terms of it's collecting the speeds of the vehicles.
So I'm not understanding that the decreases have been analyzed based on citations.
No, not based on citations, based on speed data. So we did before and after studies. With the before was just tube counters, and then we went out and used tube counters, and then we also get data from the cameras. But the before and after studies are related to us just using the same technology that we use for collecting speeds all the time, which is typically just tube counters on the roadway.
I'm sorry to interrupt your presentation even more. I was just going to say that we're going to have a good discussion next week, next Wednesday afternoon, because we're bringing the privacy and information protection principles back to council. I'm seeing, Commissioner Hardesty, that you're out on next week. So my staff, if you're watching this in the office, I think we should consider postponing that, because I would like to have Commissioner Hardesty there for that discussion. It's a balancing act between government collecting information that can help us make things better versus government collecting information that can make things worse.
Yes.
And indeed, in the parks community centers, while I was in charge, we stopped collecting demographic data because of the concern about targeting and ICE and all those things. So I will talk with you later, but I would really like you to be part of that discussion.
I would love to be part of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, just to be clear, this isn't like a smart cities thing where we're collecting information from your phone and we know your name. We are measuring speed and we are capturing photos when the law is being broken. And that's it. And that's all we're looking for with the new equipment, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, the state law is very clear about what we can use the photographic enforcement for, and we don't use it, and photos aren't taken unless someone has gone over the speed limit.
But we're still collecting license plate readers. We still have Portland Police Bureau collecting data based on automobiles driving past these readers. I mean, that's been a practice for a while. That no longer happens.
What readers?
Want to come to the mic?
Yeah. Come on, I'm sorry.
The public wants to hear.
For the record, my name is Sergeant John Holbrook. I'm with the Traffic Division, Portland Police Bureau. The automatic plate reader vehicles are not part of the photo enforcement program. They're a separate system that are assigned to the precincts. The traffic division has no automatic plate reader equipped vehicles in the division. So that is a complete separate program than the photo enforcement program. The photo enforcement program only takes a picture of a vehicle and the license plate if a violation of either the red light or the speeding laws have occurred.
And what is that?
Plate reader.
Sorry, somebody's playing.
Somebody's phone.
There you go. What is the plate? So PBOT handles the cameras, speed and red light cameras. What is the plate reader used for in the police bureau?
I actually have never been trained on the plate reader car, but it does collect. Reads license plate. It's basically like it's got some cameras attached to the top of the car.
So this isn't traffic enforcement. This is probably collecting data on people in or around
just around the
events
vehicle.
Or
yeah, around the vehicle. It's not used for traffic enforcement.
Okay.
Like I said, the traffic division does not have any plate reader equipped vehicles.
Okay.
So I do think that it would be good to have some clarification, because even if traffic division isn't using it, it is part of Portland Police Bureau's gathering of information. So as we talk about privacy versus transparency, it's important that we know where all this data feeds into and who has access to this data.
Sure, and I'm very concerned with digital privacy, and I've been on the record on that, but that's not relevant to this item.
Well, that's what I asked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't know whether or not they had access to that data, which is
yeah.
what I asked the question.
Yeah, now I know something new. We have something called a plate reader.
Oh, we got a lot more stuff. Let's talk.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So in last year, we did a community survey in part because we were working through this two-year pilot. So we did a statistically significant survey of Portland residents, asking a number of questions related to speed, but specifically wanted to know about opinions around the use of automated enforcement. And what we found was that Portland residents were pretty in support of the use of cameras on high crash corridors. We asked some specific questions about the use of automated enforcement versus officers and just whether or not they felt comfortable with this as an enforcement tool. And you can see in the graphic that about 75% of folks felt that this was a good tool. We did look at it, the differences by neighborhoods, but overall that was, there was significant support for it. And it also was compared with surveys that were done just online and questionnaire surveys that were done in early 2016 during the Vision Zero Action Plan, and it aligned with what we heard then as well, that there was public support for this as an enforcement tool to help support the work around reducing dangerous behaviors at intersections and reducing speeding in the city.
I'm going to ask again, do you have any demographic information on who thought this was a good idea, what
yes.
communities thought this was a good idea?
Yes, we can share the
full
survey.
And was it across the board, or were there some communities that thought this was a good idea versus others?
There were some slight differences, not dramatic differences, and we can share the full results with you that have both age demographic data, gender data, racial data, and then by geographic distribution as well. So we can share that full report with you.
Great.
This is just the first step in a process with the competitive solicitation. As you said, this is the first reading. The overall, if it's approved next week to go forward with a competitive solicitation, we would do the request for proposals in July and August. We'd be doing proposal review this fall. There would be contract negotiations with a selected vendor probably into early 2020, and then we'd be looking at camera replacement and potentially new locations in spring or summer of 2020.
And I do want to point out that I've been told by Traffic Division that they don't have capacity to process more citations at this time with existing staff, and there was no additional money in the police budget for the division in this budget we're about to pass. And so that's where that's part of why we have intermittent consequences, is because we need to spread enforcement around the whole city. Adding cameras won't actually increase the number of citations issued. It will cover more area so that we can flip them on and off and make sure we're capturing traffic violations throughout our high crash corridors, which exist throughout the city.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Colleagues, any more questions or deliberation? I actually want to have Irene come up to the table.
Madam Chair? Should we check to see if there's any public testimony?
Well, don't you think we should have a little more conversation before that? Because usually it goes testimony and then.
Okay.
So, welcome, Irene. Thanks for being here today. I share Commissioner Hardesty's concern with racial equity and disproportionate impact, and I had asked you to be here today to talk about how we imbue or address those things through PBOT policy. And I absolutely understand the concern with over-policing communities of color. I think as we look at the map of high crash corridors, the demographics of the community members are certainly a component, but we also have to take into account that East Portland didn't develop the same way as the central city, doesn't have the same level of complete and safe streets. And I mean, I hear as much from community members in East Portland that they don't feel they're getting equitable service in many arenas, including policing, that they have to wait too long for police to show up. So my concern in East Portland is that, and also population density. So in East Portland, we have 25% of the population lives in that area. My primary motivating concern in East Portland around traffic safety is that East Portlanders are 2 times more likely to die on our roads, and I'm going to admit my bias here. My bias is for victims and against perpetrators. So I depend on Bureau expertise to help me keep that in check and make sure that we are being equitable and we're not having disparate impacts. But I think it's reasonable to be more concerned with who's dying on the streets than who is causing the deaths. Do you want to talk about our work on this issue as it pertains to Vision Zero and these cameras?
Yeah, so for the record, my name is Irene Marion. I'm the Equity and Inclusion Manager for PBOT. I think we're up against a few challenges. One is history. So the historic disinvestment in a certain segment of our city means that we have a lot of work to do. Also, racial history and the history of enforcement. And so that's an ongoing conversation. I'm in regular conversation with the equity manager at the Portland Police Bureau to figure out what is the partnership that we need to have to understand enforcement practices, how they are doing their work on racial equity, and how we're moving through those conversations together around behavior change for city employees, but also for community members as well. And then the other challenge that you have seen today is gaps in data. So they're just for the information that's being fed to us, what we have access to, there are just huge gaps in racial demographic data, and so there's a lot we don't understand. Through our strategic plan work for the Bureau, we are really focused on transportation justice as a key element of the work that we need to pursue, and that will include what are the additional data sets that we can pull from, what are the different types of analysis that we can do. So an example I was just sharing with our team is I was put in touch with a graduate student researcher who has studied the economic impact of enforcement fines in Baltimore. And so I want to understand how can we understand how low-income populations especially are being impacted by our fine structures. So those are the types of conversations that we want to bring forward that are not reflected in the data sets that we've had access to historically, but are things that we want to pull forward into our conversation so that we can be making decisions and just understand the impacts, potentially change the practices that we have to just consider how people are impacted by our policy decisions. I think the thing that makes me hopeful is that since I've been at the Bureau, we have a local gas tax, Fixing Our Streets program, we've gotten House bill money, we have a historic investment into the infrastructure in our city. And what I have also been witness to is that we are investing into East Portland. And so we know because of the history of our city, we know that we have a lot more work to do out there. We know that that is where the concentration of our high crash network is. And so I have seen, and I always call the question to how we're investing disproportionately in that part of town to address this historic need. So it's happening. The challenge is that, you know, we are deploying projects as fast as we can, but it's still going to be, you know, another 3 to 5 years until community really sees the change, feels the change, understands, you know, that we are addressing the data that's about them and not people that are coming into our city. So we have a lot of work to do while we're deploying the infrastructure to get community kind of acclimated to why we're making these changes, how we are trying to help solve problems for them, and bring them into process so that they can continue to help inform how we're doing this work.
And as far as collecting racial data in crashes, it's not on a driver's license. The officers can't be relied upon to determine someone's race. Like, is there any and I imagine there might be restrictions on being able to ask someone their race. Is there any reliable way we could be collecting that data, either on people who are receiving citations or people who are involved in crashes, or do we have to continue to rely on observation and anecdote?
I think that's a conversation we'll need to continue to have right now. It just seems very limited in how we approach that. The recommendation earlier, you know, we can read the news articles, we can look at the pictures, we can try to understand. We also rely heavily on community partners, so where community is impacted, we are going into those neighborhoods, partnering with a local organization to just understand both the circumstances of the crash or the experience, the neighborhood, but also to connect with the family that's impacted and the individuals and in the community that is impacted by these events. And so I think there are other ways that we understand who is impacted. It's not statistically sound, and so I think it's something that our team could continue to dig in on.
And before I hand it over, I just have one more comment, really, which is I'm glad to hear that we're looking at the impact of fines on low-income community members. I mean, I wouldn't call speeding or running a red light a petty municipal violation, but I am very concerned with how these fines kind of disproportionately impact and set back low-income community members, so I was relieved to find that the amount of the fine isn't really the disincentive. So we don't need to jack up our fines to disincentivize. We do need to cover our costs because it's quite expensive. But just thank you for taking all of that into account, and thank you for being here, and Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Irene. I just wanted to say that Portland Police already collect data on who is stopped demographically and traffic stops. So I find it disingenuous to say that we can't collect data on who gets tickets when we already collect that kind of data and it's reported out on an annual basis. So I just think if there was the desire to collect that kind of data, we could actually be collecting that kind of data already without a whole lot of new steps.
This is cameras, and you get the citation in the mail. There isn't any interaction.
Well, but yeah. If you get the citation in the mail, there's a picture, and they're really good pictures, and you can actually make out even the demographic information of the individual in the picture.
I just really want to caution us against going that route, because there's already a lot of deep concern amongst community members of color around how they're being classified. Particularly Pacific Islander communities say they're often classified as Latino or Hispanic, and that there's...
Actually, they're predominantly classified as being white. Right.
Potentially, I think the issue is that if someone is just deciding who they are, they're not necessarily right. So I agree that there are places where we're getting data and we look at stops data, but I would just caution us from using that as good.
Well, we have to start somewhere, right? And if this is already happening, ever since I've been tracking Portland Police, they've been collecting this data, right? They've never told me how they decide what somebody's demographic information is, but that data is already being used to make policy decisions. And so I don't see how it would be any different if we're using the exact same data for cameras.
What I can promise you is we will explore all of the options for sure. But myself, as an example, several years ago, I got a citation that was a photo enforcement. And because I'm fair skin, if I pull my hair back, you wouldn't know that the picture was not clear enough to really see my facial features. So it's going to be different. And I think anytime that we are opening up opportunity for decision to be made and for bias to be an option, we're opening ourselves up to more complications. So we will continue to explore all of the data options that we can.
And I want to be clear, I mean, I would support that if we're not violating anyone's privacy or rights, and if we can get accurate numbers, because making assumptions about someone's racial identity is...
I don't think we've ever had accurate numbers, but what we have is at least a roadmap based on what Portland Police think is happening right now.
Okay.
Yeah. If I may.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I just want to procedurally, I've got to go in a minute.
Okay.
If there is someone here from the public, I'd like to hear them before, okay, because we're going to a second reading. Do you mind if we just suspend for a moment? This has been a valuable discussion, but I think we're also about to lose Commissioner Hardesty.
No problem.
Which means we're about to
lose
a quorum.
Do we have any testimony?
Yes, we have one person.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Kim Marks.
Thank you, Ms. Marion, for coming in, and also Sergeant Holbrook. That's really helpful.
Welcome. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's always good to be back. Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to speak today on this ordinance. My name is Cal Marks. I'm the Director of Transportation Equity at the Rosewood Initiative in Outer East Portland. Although we did, sorry, gonna rearrange this. Although we believe that street design changes are the best way of addressing speeding and other violent behaviors, enforcement cannot be eliminated as a tool, thus we support the ordinance. Given the history of racial biased enforcement, we believe that automated enforcement is the best method of enforcement. We also support alternative ways of clearing a fine, such as the Legal Services Day held every other month at Rosewood. However, this should not be a way to continually repeat bad or dangerous behavior. Placement of speed and red light cameras or enforcement should be data-driven. Top priority should be given to high crash intersections like Southeast, Stark, and 122nd, which is the most dangerous intersection in the network. Priority should also be given to high crash corridors. This ordinance will help reduce aggressive and violent driving behavior. Such violence makes East Portlanders twice as likely to suffer a fatality or serious injury from a driver-on-pedestrian crash as the rest of the city. Those impacted are children. They are also the disabled, seniors, and people of color, like the blind African-American citizen or senior killed at Division and 130th earlier this year. On a personal note, a day doesn't go by when I don't experience someone running a red light to turn left. A day doesn't go by that I don't see someone speeding to get through a yellow before it turns red. I worry for myself and who will take care of my family. I worry for my daughter, who is also legally blind, and whenever she goes out. I worry for all road users in East Portland. We must use all available tools we have to get to Vision Zero. Before we can get there, however, we have to change the culture of driving and how society views behaviors like speeding and red light running. These aren't minor acts, but rather aggressive and violent behaviors and should be treated accordingly. Thank you, and again, we support and encourage you to pass this ordinance.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in.
All right. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. I think that's a gavel. And we are adjourned.